Menders, Special Episode 10, Using Local Well-Being Surveys to Respond to the Crisis of Clinician Burnout and Turnover in Our Healthcare System, with myself, Dr. Nicola DePaul. It's easy to become over-focused on metrics for the sake of metrics and forget what those metrics are getting at. And the heart of every metric that we're thinking about tends to be safety, good patient care. And a huge piece of good patient care is good staff support. Having clinicians who feel supported, who feel cared about, who feel safe, and who feel capable of operating at their highest level of their expertise in their organization and working as a team with their team in a really committed, delightful, and congruent way with those other professionals. You're listening to Menders with clinical psychologist and leadership consultant, Dr. Nicola DePaul. Each week, get a dose of real-world inspiration from free-thinking leaders, top clinicians, healthcare innovators, and myself. Looking for quick fixes or standard management tools? Try someplace else. Motivated to maximize the resilience and diversity of your team? Sustain your momentum as a leader and transform your healthcare system? Welcome to Menders. Well, hello there. This is Nicola DePaul, and I'm really thrilled to be offering this special edition of a Menders podcast. So anyway, I'm excited to be with you today, like always. Just don't happen to have a guest and have a special topic that we're going to be talking about today. But first of all, I'd like to invite you to just take a moment to reflect on the names of the people you know, your fellow clinicians, your colleagues, your friends, who've left your clinic or your facility, or perhaps even dropped out of healthcare over the last 2 years. Maybe you've even considered that path yourself. I know, sadly, I've been thinking about that, and I can think of the names of more than one handful of friends and colleagues of mine who've left clinical care. And who hasn't? It's been a pretty brutal couple of years for us all. So we all know that COVID hit our strained healthcare system, an already strained healthcare system, and it hit pretty hard, and it exacerbated the underlying challenges that have been contributing to the traumatization and demoralization of physicians, nurses, psychologists, respiratory therapists, social workers, you name it. Everybody in healthcare has been hit pretty hard over these past couple of years. And even before COVID hit, we were actually experiencing a pretty significant amount of strain, which if you've been in healthcare for a while, you're probably well aware because you've probably experienced that yourself. But in 2019, studies actually showed that about 50% of physicians were experiencing burnout. And rates were even higher for certain specialties, such as emergency medicine. And then, of course, same for nurses as well, actually, with emergency room nurses, I think, scoring closer to 70% burnout rates. So just extraordinary amounts of exhaustion and fatigue and demoralization of clinicians within our system. And to complicate that, also in 2019, rates of turnover within healthcare were hovering over or right around 20%. And so we know with the Great Resignation that those rates are quite a bit higher. We're assuming close to 25%, but it's a little bit tricky to track right now. And many organizations, as I'm sure you're seeing on LinkedIn or Instagram or anywhere you get your social media feed, even the New York Times, so many healthcare organizations are acknowledging that that we are really struggling to retain good clinicians or retain any clinicians. And so many organizations are announcing that they're now focused on improving wellness and well-being and addressing burnout. And that is fantastic. And it's even better that some of these organizations are also explicitly addressing challenges with staffing with turnover and staffing and acknowledging their role and looking at the systemic factors that are contributing to burnout and turnover in healthcare employees. Some organizations are still kind of stuck in the let's focus on employee wellness through mindfulness or other lovely interventions, which don't get me wrong, I believe in them. They are fantastic because we do need people to take care of themselves, but we're never going to, you know, mindfully get ourselves out of this kind of great challenge that we've fallen into. It's really going to take systemic level interventions. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today. So rates of burnout, dropout are not actually inevitable outcomes of our current global situation. There's actually quite a bit of hope, and there's recent research that indicates that those hospitals or healthcare systems that have been more attentive to the needs of their staff by providing greater levels of flexibility, certainty, policies that are really tailored to address concerns that staff have now, and that are offering more emotional support or tangible logistical support, helping with childcare, helping keep our physicians, our clinicians, and their families safe. These healthcare systems are actually experiencing much lower rates of turnover and lower rates of burnout. So clearly there's hope. And it really comes down to healthcare leadership's ability to talk with their clinicians, have strong conversations, have good communication and connection, and start to really understand the real-world needs that their clinicians have so that they can intervene and provide discretionary supports to meet these identified needs. Hey, if you're listening to this and you're not sure how to get started to address burnout and create a culture of well-being in your organization, and you're looking for a roadmap and someone to support your team through this process, listen up, because this is for you. Investing in your people is the smartest thing your healthcare system can do. Whether you have a tiny system or a large complex department, there are focused actions you can take to transform your organizational culture from burnout to well-being. I work with leadership teams to simplify and demystify this process so that you can feel really good about the efforts you're putting out in the world and so confident that your investments in employee engagement and team well-being will pay dividends. Head on over to mendinghealthsystems.com and join me today. And so what do I mean by that? Well, discretionary support simply means, you know, anything that the healthcare leader is identifying is a clear need in this moment, something that their employees are saying, hey, help us out. We need some help with these really specific things. And so when healthcare leaders, executives, team leads, supervisors are able to step in and say, yes, we got you. We're going to provide that level of support. It goes a very long way towards improving morale. And even when healthcare leaders are not quite certain about how to respond, what to do, or if they can meet the needs, by stepping in and saying, hey, we want to do what we can to support you. I'm not sure if we can do it. I don't know what we can, you know, what we can do to change your current situation. But man, we support you. We hear you. We share your concerns. We want to work with you towards resolution, towards transforming this environment so it feels safe, good, and nourishing for all of us. That goes a really long way. And so it's one of the things that I'm most passionate about, to kind of create that connection between healthcare leaders, healthcare executives, and the frontline clinicians who are sort of struggling through current challenges. Because when we can really come together and create that understanding, resolve that confusion, and bring those discretionary supports in, we have the capacity to transform the employee experience. But this is also where I see some of the most challenges that leaders are running into. And I've been working with healthcare systems to improve the employee wellness or employee well-being and the employee experience since about 2015. So throughout my career, I've often heard two concerns come up. The first concern is that the healthcare leader just doesn't know what they can do to make a difference. Like, I don't know, everything seems so out of my control. And the things that I know are within my control just don't seem that important. It doesn't seem meaningful. So what can I do? And if I even try, is it going to matter? Is it, you know, is it even going to matter to my employees? Is there anything I can do to make their lives a little bit easier? Another thing that I hear pretty often is, you know, okay, I hear my employees, I hear their concerns, I hear their complaints, but what they're asking for is really difficult. It's really complicated. It's not easy for me to give them that flex time that they're asking for. It's not easy to let them have the same days off every week. And I don't know how to move forward with what they say they need. I'm just not sure what to do. So in my opinion, one of the tools that can be the most useful in this type of situation is the very humble survey. So just, you know, it can even be a real quick and dirty survey, just any tool that, and it's a simple tool that leaders have access to that they can use to address these concerns. So you might be wondering, with survey fatigue being so extraordinarily high, why is this woman suggesting we give out another survey? That sounds terrible. And I hear you. I get it. Survey fatigue is real. So let me break this down real quick. And maybe this will make the suggestion seem a little bit more palatable. So what I mean by a survey could be anything from, you know, kind of a systematized conversation that a healthcare leader has with their employees. Even something similar to a stay interview where you're asking consistent questions, you're getting different feedback, and you're getting absolutely as many employees as possible. This is a great tool for smaller teams. So, you know, you have 5-6 people, maybe even 10 people. It's probably not difficult to just find the time to sit down with them, understand what's going on, demonstrate that you're willing to listen, demonstrate that you're willing to care, and then think through, even perhaps as a team or with your leadership team, how are we going to respond to what people are saying they need? So for slightly larger teams, you could think about a focus group or something that is involving more people present. You know, you might not be able to survey all of your employees in this manner, but you can get a good sense of what employees from different parts of the system are concerned about, thinking about what their real pain points are, what their real priorities are. And then similarly, involving your employees as key stakeholders as you figure out, how do I want to respond to their feedback? What's going to happen next? How are we going to take action? And then for those larger organizations or, you know, departments and facilities. So I tend to work with organizations that have, you know, 50 plus employees when I'm doing my own work with these organizations or with these healthcare teams to better understand what's going on with them. So when you have a larger department or a whole facility or a whole healthcare system, then of course, including a paper pencil or electronically delivered survey is going to be a pretty critical tool. Yes, we may not love survey fatigue, but it's a really fantastic strategy to get more feedback from more of our employees throughout the system. And of course, there are really excellent evidence-based ways to try to that will allow you to get better quality feedback and feedback from more employees as you're giving out the survey. So some things that can help you move past survey fatigue. And I have to tell you that as much as survey fatigue might be a concern, the biggest challenge with receiving feedback is actually when employees don't believe that their investment of time is going to be worth it. When they don't believe that their thoughts and their contributions are going to be valued by leadership, that's actually when we see the most drop off. So if you're able to make a meaningful connection and help your employees see the value that you see in their feedback, they are much more likely to take the time to actually share with you their concerns, their priorities, and give you really useful information that you can turn into local policy later on. Another concern that I sometimes hear is that, you know, well, my organization already has like a national level or all employee type of survey. Man, congratulations. If you've got that, you are extraordinarily lucky and in a fantastic organization that really cares about that bird's eye view. So I do want to just make a note that there is a big difference between a national or all organization level survey and a local survey that might be over your department or section or facility or clinic that you are directly involved with overseeing. And typically all organization surveys have a purpose that is just a little bit different. It is really focused on that, you know, airplane level, 30,000 foot view. What's going on at the whole organization? How are national policies or, you know, executive level policies impacting employees? And what are the major trends within our organization? And while that is incredibly important and useful information, it tends to be a little bit less helpful for the healthcare leadership on the ground actually managing frontline clinical staff. And so that's really where a local survey comes in. So local surveys can be tailored to the unique experiences of smaller groups or even work groups of employees. They're really designed to meet the needs of a department, a section, a smaller facility, or a team. And they have the capacity to assess both the impacts of any national or facility level policies and also local or direct supervisor team-related policies and experience. And they're looking specifically at staff well-being, morale, turnover intent, psychological safety. So things that the local leadership have a much more influence over and are able to address directly. Local surveys also have the power to promote clear two-way communication between local leadership and the employees on the leadership's team. And so, you know, really whatever level of leadership you're providing, it allows you to connect with your direct reports, the people who are directly under your purview. And local surveys are somewhat more or can be more flexible when you're designing them. They are ultimately or completely flexible, and they allow leadership to ask the right questions at the right time to better understand employee concerns and priorities, and also to just explicitly ask, what do you need? What can I do? What can our team do to support you? A well-executed survey will help healthcare leaders translate employee concerns into clear, actionable steps to improve the leadership team's ability to meet the changing needs of their staff. So I want to just take a quick moment and provide a brief case example of one of my public sector clients. So this particular client began using a local survey back in 2015. And the leadership team recognized they needed more granular data about the concerns of their employees than their larger organization was able to provide through the all organization level survey. So we collaboratively designed a survey that addressed burnout, psychological safety, turnover intent, team culture, and staff priorities. And while the quantitative results were definitely interesting and enlightening, and they provided great context that helped leadership take the temperature of their department. How are we doing? Are we healthy, unhealthy? The real bonus came in the form of qualitative feedback from the employees, and this feedback was used to generate actionable strategies that were later turned into local policies. And what I noticed as being one of the most helpful elements of this local survey was that the department that I was consulting with, leadership from this department were able to use the survey results to clearly communicate staff needs to their own executive level leaders. And that clear communication allowed or kind of sped up the approval of local policies and local policy changes that really focused on increasing flexibility in employee work schedules, improving communication between departments and facilities, prioritizing strategies to increase staffing ratios and promote retention, and also some changes that promoted improvements in physical safety measures at some outlying clinics that were involved, that were measured, where staff reported feeling unsafe and vulnerable. And given the recent, so many recent events, including the Tulsa Medical Center shooting, I think it is important to just acknowledge that healthcare clinicians are feeling pretty vulnerable. And even without like the horror of mass shootings, healthcare is actually one of the more dangerous professions for people to be involved in. So physical safety is also a huge concern for staff. And, you know, verbal aggression, sexual harassment, all kinds of things come up that impact staff safety and well-being in the workplace. In addition, of course, to other concerns that we think of more consistently with the COVID pandemic, such as staffing shortages and moral injury related to just the excess amount of death and staff's difficulty responding in really meaningful ways, given resource shortages. So anyway, so being able to address those really specific needs was powerful for this particular department. And I would just love, or I guess I'm very honored to say that this particular client has continued to conduct this survey annually since 2015. They did have a couple of years that they missed because of the intensity of the COVID pandemic, but they're back at it, looking at their staff well-being and looking at what can local leadership do to like get things back on track to care for their employees in a really meaningful way. So while local policies and these policies that I'm just describing from this client example may simply reflect good practice to you, I think it's also important to recognize that, you know, good practice is vulnerable and can be overlooked in the heat of the moment when a crisis hits, when COVID hit, something tremendous and unexpected, or when new initiatives come up that have to be addressed and addressed now. It's easy to become over-focused on metrics for the sake of metrics and forget what those metrics are getting at. And the heart of every metric that we're thinking about tends to be safety, good patient care. And a huge piece of good patient care is good staff support. Having clinicians who feel supported, who feel cared about, who feel safe, and who feel capable of operating at their highest level of their expertise in their organization and working as a team with their team in a really committed, delightful, and congruent way with those other professionals. So it's my belief that the local wellness survey, which I acknowledge is a humble tool, it has the capacity to help healthcare leadership remain attuned to employee concerns and allows them to remain focused on employee well-being as a core value. And focusing on employee well-being is so critical, especially in the midst of tremendous systemic stress and challenge, as we've seen in the last 2 years. Something that keeps me up at night is just wondering about, is our healthcare system going to survive? What's going on? It's so difficult for people. It's so exhausting. And so it's incredibly important to really be focusing in, paying attention, and meeting the needs of our staff. And we really do that by talking with our staff, asking them what they need, and then doing what we can to meet those needs. So thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to Menders. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with a friend. And don't forget to head on over to mendinghealthsystems.com to get started creating cultural transformation for your healthcare team today. Let's create transformation magic.